And welcome to Comic Culture, the radio show that champions the local comic book store.
Champions the local comic book store.
We're on 93.3 CFMU McMaster Radio and podcast at comicbookdaily.com. I am Walter Duralia, comic shop owner and Overstreet Price Guide advisor.
And I am Chris Owen, professor of comic history at Hamilton's Mohawk College.
And for the next hour, we will use the form of a gorilla.
And the form of a waterfall as we travel through the world of comic books.
Chris, I don't understand those.
Yeah, lines. I understand it, but you know what? We really got to get our producer to talk about something else next time. Anyways, by the way, that was the Ramones doing the original Spider-Man cartoon.
I love that
cartoon.
One. You played that a few times, Chris. Yeah, yeah. I think it's a great tune.
Yeah. Well, you know, I thought something to get us going a little bit, you know, the old
full of energy,
Spider-Man.
Pump.
Yeah, exactly. That's right, it. All right. Well, you know, Walt, it is new comic book day, of course.
It is.
It is. And that means that we have new comics this week, and new this week is brought to you by Apple. Navigating the negative zone, there's an app for that. English to Latvian translator, there's an app for that. Hey Galactus, need a calorie counter for that planet you're eating? There's an app for that too. The Future Foundation, brought to you by Apple, featuring I Ultimate Nullifiers, I Cosmic Cubes, and I Can't Believe People Will Buy This Stuff.
Good for you, Chris. Thank you, Apple, for your support, and welcome aboard. All right. Chris, you're right. Today is Wednesday, and it brings us together every week to talk about comic books hitting the new this week stands at your local comic book shops.
Exactly, yes. And I, as always, I'm always excited about what's going on with new comics and everything that's new happening in the comic book industry on Wednesdays.
Right. And today we're going to start with Mark Zuckerberg.
Mark Zuckerberg, yeah.
Creator of Facebook.
Yeah, you know that little
one
thing,
shot.
You know that little thing called Facebook that's out there, Walt? I know you probably don't know much about
I've
it.
I've never been on it.
Yeah.
But I will. One day I'll get there, Chris.
That's okay. There's only like a billion people on it or something.
All right.
Like that,
yeah. Well, listen, I'll get there. I'll be the billion and first.
Well, that's, right. Yeah, you certainly will be.
So Blue Water Productions, which were the proud people that brought us stuff like the Justin Bieber comic and others.
Yes.
They're doing the Mark Zuckerberg Creator of Facebook one-shot for the low, low price of $6.99.
Sorry, I must have caught in my throat there.
So what I loved about this book was when the write-up here is, learn how a young man's frustration with woman helped spark an idea that would have him dating Victoria's Secret models, and how a socially inept young man wound up creating a company that has revolutionized the way hundreds of millions of people,
you know,
blah, 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 blah.
I know we're trying to keep this radio show PG and all, but that sounds like the beginning of some sort of pornographic movie, more so than
it was one of those like, you know, when you're on a website and over on the right column there's like here the secrets to dating Victoria's Secret women, click on this.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I don't know what you're talking about. Remember that Rodney joke Rodney Dangerfield goes, I bought a book called How to Make It Big. Boy, was I disappointed. It was all about money. Anyway.
Yes, well, yes. That's well. You know what? I'm sure that there's going to be lots of people out there going out there and buying the Mark Zuckerberg comic book.
For what, Chris? For motivation? To learn the secrets of success? What?
You know what? Because it's a fad, and unfortunately, these kind of things will sell. I mean, let's not forget the kind of fury and that people went into to try to buy the Barack Obama comic book. And
right.
It's a little bit different. I mean, I don't want to put, you know, Mark Zuckerberg, the creator of Facebook, on the same plateau as
the president
as the
of
president,
the United States,
the first African American president of the United States.
You're right.
You know, however, you know, Facebook is a pretty phenomenon, crazy phenomenon out there. And so, you know, who knows?
Yeah, you think Stan Lee has a Facebook page?
I'm sure he does.
He does?
I'm sure he does, yeah.
Good. All right. Yeah. All right, so check that out at, I'm sure, the finer comic book stores
absolutely
will be carrying that.
Absolutely.
Maybe not all comic
Maybe
book
Maybe not
stores.
All of them, no.
All right. Batman, Chris. Batman Arkham Asylum Series 1 action figures,
you know what?
Hit the stands today.
Yeah, you know what's really cool is I'm a huge fan of the Batman Arkham Asylum video game that came out, and that's what this series is based on. It's a new toy series based on the new character designs for the Batman Arkham Asylum video game. And what's really neat is they kind of went back to the well a little bit here, and they started to redesign the characters a little bit more based on contemporary thoughts and things like that. You know,
contemporary thoughts.
Well, you know what I mean. Like, you know, they kind of looked at the characters again, and you know, the Scarecrow. They thought, what does the Scarecrow do? For example, he
scares crows.
Well, okay, you know what? You're really not making this very easy.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
The Scarecrow. You know, his whole thing is he has like laughing gas and poison gas, and he kind of puts fear in. He has this fear gas, right? So now in his new design, he has his own gas mask so that he can't possibly inhale his own fear gas.
Right.
So they've kind of redesigned some of the characters, and some of them are really, really cool looking.
All right.
So,
now, who do you get in this set?
In this set, you're going to have Batman, of course, Harley Quinn, Scarecrow, and the Joker, and Scarface.
Right. Oh, okay. So you get four figures.
Yeah. Yes.
And it's that now. I got to admit, though, at the shop, DC Direct rules in terms of regular comic, how can I say this, regular toy lines that come in that people look forward to. Marvel is missing the boat here because we do so well with DC Direct to say the new Darkest Night.
Yeah, you know what? Marvel has never really Marvel has never really caught on to that whole toy thing because you know what? Marvel has done many toys in their past, but they've never really had the continuous success that DC has had over the years. I mean, DC has continually brought out all kinds of really great products, whereas Marvel kind of has fits and stops, kind of like, you know.
Well, they had that Marvel Legends line that people really liked.
Yeah.
But then they just let it wane.
Yeah, it's kind of petered out.
And I don't understand.
Yeah.
Right. And it's funny, though, because people will not stop buying the DC stuff. You can have literally the 37th incarnation of Batman.
Oh, yeah.
People can't wait till it comes out.
For sure. And there's people that buy all of them. Right.
Like
there's people that buy just Batman.
And there's guys that act like little schoolgirls when, like, you know, like one of these guys, like, I don't know, the Warlord or something.
Yeah,
oh, my God, there's never been one. And,
well,
you know,
yeah,
like, I can
sure.
finally have one.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and I think it's cool. But, you know, what's funny is that you and I have often talked about how we can't believe that, you know, back when I don't work at a comic book store anymore, but back when I did.
There's a reason for that.
Hey, it's because I'm teaching comic books now.
Right.
Right. Okay. So. We often said, you know, why, you know, Superman and Batman figurines and Spider-Man figurines, these should be staples at every comic book store. And for whatever reason, they're not. Because they're always trying to produce the newest fad or craze or something like that. And the staple comic book characters are always hard to find. Like, I remember when people would come in and say, oh, you know, I want my son or I want my daughter to have a Superman or a Supergirl action figure.
Right.
And there was never any around.
If they didn't happen upon a series release that had one.
Right.
And usually those, at a half-decent comic book shop, the life cycle of those may be 6 weeks.
Right.
Right? And for the better characters, maybe 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Right? And then they're gone.
Yeah. And
right?
So if you weren't actively following the comic toy cycle,
right?
Then if you just said, "Hey, you know what? My son really loved the Superman
Oh, there's
movie.
A birthday coming up. I need a Batman figure."
Yeah, you're completely out of luck.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
Completely out of luck.
Right. And this is the thing though, where perhaps the toy companies like DC Direct or something can go. And they have done this a few times, and we've taken them up on it a few times, is, hey, you can get a solid case of
just Batman.
Because, some of the old Marvel Legends stuff is, you know, you can get your Wolverine, but you got to take your, I don't know.
Yeah, you got to get Sabretooth and Cyclops
and Dazzler. It didn't make sense
at
the time. And then when people go, oh, do you have any more Wolverines left? We say, no. Can you get any more? We say, no, because we have, you know, 17 unsold Cages that come with it or something
right.
like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, for right. sure.
So,
yeah.
All right.
Yeah,
all right. So we're going to move on to Marvel.
Looking forward to that Arkham Asylum.
Yeah. So check your local comic shop for the Arkham Asylum Series 1 action figures today. And Fantastic Four number 588 is Marvel's book that I picked this week because it, I guess, deals with the death of Torch.
Oh, hold on. Spoiler alert here. In case you don't know who the Fantastic Four is, now the Fantastic Three here, in case you're not too sure, there's a death, so just don't listen for the brief second here. And then turn it back on.
Right. Okay, so ignore that I said the death of Torch and listen to what Chris said about the spoiler alert.
Wait, are you saying a little late in that?
Right, yes.
Right. Okay, you know what? I'm just trying to help out here. You know what? Yeah. Whatever.
Hey, listen. The comic has a bonus Spider-Man story where Spidey consoles Franklin Richards. So you get a little side story with Spidey in it. And the book deals with how people, the grief and stuff. It's setting up that FF, Future Foundation thing as well. Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, here's the perfect litmus test, I guess, for, you know, what do people want to read? Do they want to visit, you know, the scene of the crime and see how people are coping?
Right.
Because that's what it sounds like this issue is all about.
Yeah.
Or do they just want to get to the meat of the action?
Well, I think, you know, they're dealing with the death because I'm sure they're thinking to themselves, hey, how can we milk this a little bit longer? As well as, you know, they're going to include the Spider-Man story in the back because, well, Spider-Man is going to be the next, you know, member, right? So let's include a backstory to get people more aware of who the next character is going to be.
But maybe for true fans, they need a month. They need an issue like this because you think about it. Think about some guy reading FF for the last 25 years. He's got emotional investment into, you know, the Torch and that whole team dynamic.
And,
you know, maybe kind of he wants to see how the team is dealing and coping.
Yeah,
and all
I suppose maybe. I don't think this kind of comic is going to be anything near like The Death of Superman, right? Where, you know, it was pretty hard hitting. And I mean, the death of Johnny Storm, as big as it is, it's he's no Superman.
Tell you what, to him, it was a big deal.
Well, you know what? You're absolutely right.
All right.
Absolutely right. Well, you know what? Let's take a brief moment here and play a little bit of music. And this, of course, is the Space Ghost theme song music from, like the late 1960s, 70s kind of thing. Here we go. That was terrible. That
terrible.
Was terrible. Yes.
Chris, great segue as always into industry news. And industry news is brought to you by Valiant Comics. Still available in fine quarter bins everywhere.
Hey, that's excellent. You know, Valiant Comics, you know, there was a brief time period.
Very brief.
They were actually worth some money.
Very brief.
Very, very brief. Yes. Very brief. And then Jim Shooter somehow lost that company and went on to create, you know, whatever, the Defiant Comics and the Warriors of Plasm.
I remember that, yes. Yeah,
you know,
good stuff.
If there was such a thing as 10-cent comic quarter bins, bins, I guess that would be great.
Well, you know what? I mean, listen, the thing with quarter bins is it's embarrassing if you sell out. Right, you always have to have something in them, and then you keep adding good quarter bins.
Yes, that's true. That's
and the Plasm, they hold the fort. They're always in there because they never sell. So you never have to reload the whole box. It's always like a half a box.
Well, that's good.
Like
that. That's good. Yeah. Something has to keep things going. Yeah.
Right, Chris. Industry news this week. I want to start by talking about a boom.
Boom Entertainment.
Boom Entertainment, and how they've renamed their kids' line Kaboom, and they're picking up the Peanuts.
Like the Charles Schultz
Peanuts, Charlie Brown Peanuts line. And the play here is that Boom did all the Pixar stuff. Now, Cars.
Now, okay, so Boom has now become Kaboom.
Right.
And now Boom, of course, they had, as you were going to say, the Disney license. Yeah, sorry, the Pixar license.
Pixar license. Yeah, yeah. And now Marvel, the news is that Marvel gets the Pixar books.
Right, because right. Now, of course, Disney owns Marvel, so right. It's, you know, why wouldn't they?
Right. And now Boom Studios has to finagle, I guess, and then look for good properties.
Yeah.
And so they're picking up Peanuts.
Oh, okay.
And now the thing I don't understand here, and it wasn't clear when I read stuff on the net, was Fantagraphics is doing those really cool reproductions.
Yeah, they started doing the graphic novels of all the old stuff and sort of chronologically reproducing all the old Peanuts comic strips.
Right, right. And okay, so when I read this, though, there was one thought or a question that came to me that I wanted to bring to you was, do books like Peanuts or books, sorry, properties, characters like Peanuts, Donald Duck, and do they really matter anymore? Like, well, or is it just total nostalgia? Oh, these things were so big at their time.
Yeah, yeah. You know what's funny? It's I think it all depends on the format that they're published in. When you publish a Peanuts graphic novel in a hardcover format that costs $36.95, you know, you're not getting the 5-year-old, 6-year-old reading that stuff, right?
Right.
Whereas, you know, remember, you know, back, you know, in the 70s, they used to publish them as sort of like mini paperback kind of, you know, books where, you know, you could read them and kids would get them for, you know, at a quarter at a garage sale or something like that.
Right.
And that was something sort of different. But now, because of the format, because of the price involved, I think it's only going to be purchased by people that are buying it purely for nostalgic or for art reasons, artistic value.
Right.
Whereas, you know, I think that if they were published still as a floppy, soft cover kind of, trade paperback that maybe costs $10 or something like that, then you can give them to your kids to read and maybe then it might be more geared towards that.
Okay. But I guess my question, I misphrased it maybe, is Peanuts, you know, it's living off its past glories, and so is, let's say, Donald Duck and stuff like that. So what I'm saying is those characters, you know, Charlie Brown,
yep.
Donald Duck, you know, Dennis the Menace, can they capture the imaginations of kids today by having a new artist writing new stories? Or is it just kind of going back and doing collections and you know, having like basically older people trying to force feed it to their little kids?
Right, right.
And I don't know if in the long run that's going to pay.
Yeah, I don't.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, I don't know if somebody was to take the helm of the Peanuts characters. I don't think they could do it justice the way Charles Schulz did. I don't think it would have the same kind of charm.
But do kids today? Well, do they buy into the Charles Schulz? You're saying that they do. They would more so.
I think they would
than like some young upstart.
I think it depends. I mean, I think there's going to be, you know, I think, you know, when we were kids, you know, we probably had trade paperbacks of or a little pocketbooks of Peanuts and stuff like that. But I'm sure there's something that, you know, maybe you may, I mean, I know I had Dick Tracy, and Dick Tracy, you know, wasn't published in my time period, but I still, my dad had Dick Tracy books that I still went back and I read and I enjoyed. So I think it depends on the character, and I think it depends on the format of the books. So
right.
So I think it's very possible that kids can like Charlie Brown and Peanuts, especially when they're still the Charlie Brown Christmas special and Halloween special, so they're familiar with those characters, and it's still being published on an ongoing series, like in the newspaper in syndication. So I think kids will still identify with those characters, you know, whereas I don't know if they might identify with, say, like the Far Side, because
right,
it's not being
published
anymore.
Well, I wasn't going Far Side. I was going more like, let's say, Ben 10 or obviously guys like SpongeBob and stuff like
right.
that, where maybe, you know, in order for, or even Scooby-Doo,
yep.
okay, the
yep.
Scooby-Doo that has made the generational jump, because when I was a kid, I loved Scooby-Doo. My kids love Scooby-Doo, right?
Right, right.
So, But they've kind of handed Scooby-Doo over to a new generation, and the new generation is writing Scooby-Doo for today's kids.
Right. Okay.
Whereas today's kids are consuming Charles Schulz Peanuts from the 60s.
I think because there's two different formats here, I think Scooby-Doo, because it's mainly in you know, I guess it's not as much in comic book form, it's more in cartoon form.
Right.
I can see how that might be updated, and maybe kids might be able to relate to, you know, Diego or Dora the Explorer or SpongeBob more so than maybe Charlie Brown. But when it comes to printed form, maybe the old classics are still going to hold up.
Right. But, okay, I don't want to spend too much time on it.
No.
But when kids come into a local comic shop and they see a SpongeBob graphic novel,
they're going to go towards
and
that.
A Charles Schulz. That's right. So, yeah. All right. Speaking of graphic novels, the next topic up on industry news is, Chris, I know you're going to be excited to hear about.
Okay.
The Royal Wedding is getting the graphic novel.
Oh, sorry. It was a big sigh there. Sorry.
Kate
about that.
And William.
Yes.
A very public love affair. A graphic novel that should be out in April, early April.
Yep.
Plenty of time before the April 29th royal nuptials.
Sounds terrible. It really does. I mean, you know, I'm sure people will buy it, but why? I guess is my biggest question. I don't understand why anybody would want to buy a graphic novel based on the royal wedding.
I absolutely agree with you.
Right.
I absolutely agree with you. But you have to look at the silver lining here. You have to kind of look at the half full glass.
Okay.
Is if they put this into a graphic novel, and if comic book shops, your local comic book store that we all go to, is brave enough to order a few.
Yes.
You're going to get this thing maybe in local newspapers and stuff, and you're going to see some new people in your store.
Do you remember way, way, way back in the day, all of about 5 minutes ago, we were talking about quarter bins? I'm using my psychic powers here, and I'm seeing
amazing Chriskin.
I'm seeing a lot of royal wedding graphic novels in discount bins.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. You may be right.
Yeah.
You may be right. But I'm excited about it. I think it'll work, because think about this. I mean, I know that the early 80s, the Pope John Paul comic.
Yes. Yes. I remember
people
that.
People actually look for that, and they'll actually buy that for a few bucks, right?
Yeah.
Now,
okay.
Now, can you imagine a Charles and Diana comic from whenever the heck they got married in 81 or whatever it was, or 80 something?
Yeah.
You know, that would be something that, the Anne of Green Gables mom would buy.
Pope John Paul is one thing. I mean, he's one person.
He's a pope.
He's the pope.
Right.
I don't know if the royal wedding between these two people is going to have the same stature as the pope.
Well, Chris, the future king and queen of England, you know, that's all I got to say.
Yeah, you're right. Maybe they can get them signed at a convention. Maybe they can invite them to the show.
Well, Wizard World Toronto, Booth 107, Jill Gerard is signing his Buck Rogers. And Booth 108, it is Kate and William signing their graphic novel, A Royal Wedding.
All right. Oh, maybe I get it signed and then I get slapped.
I say, would you like it autographed? Oh, cheerio.
Oh, boy. Okay, anyway, keep
all
going
right
here.
All right. Chris, we report on this a lot. We should probably get some sort of payola or free tickets for the amount of times you and I have talked about the Spider-Man musical.
You're absolutely right.
These guys should be sending us free box seats. Or
yes.
Is there box seats
in
the
theater?
You know
what? That's an excellent point. Out of all the people that are in the media in some sort of fashion, I would imagine we probably talk about the Spider-Man musical more than anybody else.
Right. And I would just hope that they would not look upon the fact that every time we talked about it, it was in a negative way.
Well, you know what? Here's a chance for the people that are running the show to send us free tickets to see how good it is, and so we can eat our words.
Right.
And so
report on how great it is.
So, you know, if you're out there, Bono, or whoever happens to be associated with the show, if you're more than welcome to send free tickets to us via comicbookdaily.com.
Excellent, Chris. Well, looks like they've got some guy named Paul Bogaev to improve the production arrangements, sound quality, and all that. This is according to the New York Times. Now, this Bogaev guy has worked with guys like Phil Collins and Elton John before, but my question is, how can he improve on Bono and the Edge?
Well, you know,
how can you go in and tell Bono, hey, look, a boner. I mean, Bono.
I really don't know. I really don't know. You know, I'm assuming that, you know, this guy knows what he's doing. I would hope. I don't know who. I've never heard of him before, but that doesn't necessarily mean anything.
Right.
I guess in one sense, I don't think they can make it any worse.
Oh.
Based on the press that I've heard so far. And again, you know, you can only make it better. And once again, I'm stressing to you, producers of the show, send us tickets to show me how good this show really is.
Right. And now, when I'm reading this story, the cool part is this show is the second highest grossing show on Broadway.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
So you know.
But is that because they're charging $185 a ticket to get in?
That doesn't matter. What matters is it's the second highest grossing show on Broadway.
All right, fair enough.
Because it's Spider-Man.
Yes.
Now, the next time you and I go to New York.
Yes.
You know, for a Comic-Con or whatever.
Yeah.
You know what? I have an inkling that we're going to go see this show, right?
We would have to go via the free tickets that are going to be sent to us.
Right.
Right.
Via the free tickets that are going to be sent to us.
Yes.
But the other, you know, the five or six guys we traveled to for that weekend?
Yes, yes.
They're going to pay.
Well, absolutely, yes.
Right.
Yeah.
So, and ditto everybody going to New York.
Okay,
a comic
okay.
Book
so
fan.
Hold on. You know what? I'm just going to completely digress here for a second here. If we had, and I don't think we've ever talked about this before, what other kind of musicals could there be that have been made, that should be made out of comic books?
Right, that's very good, Chris.
You know,
now the easy answer would be, you know, Batman and Superman.
Right, right.
Or maybe,
you know,
X-Men.
Yes.
Right.
But I mean, like, should there be like a Dazzler, you know, musical? Because I mean, really, her whole thing is basing, making music into light, and that's that kind of thing. Like, what other kind of, I'm sure there's.
This is what I think. Right away, I'm thinking, okay, look at the classics. Look at, say, Jekyll and Hyde.
Right.
So you do a Hulk.
Oh, that'd
be
good.
But you based it on, like, the English, the Gothic Jekyll and Hyde.
Yeah, very good.
Very good. And then you go the Wagner Thor, you know, that type of stuff.
It'd be like an opera.
The opera.
It could be playing
like
at the
Thor.
Met.
You do stuff like that.
Oh, I like that idea a lot.
So you look at the classics of the plays.
Right, right.
And you look at the comic characters that are kind of loosely based on those classics or that are close.
Yeah, I like that
idea.
And
you go that route.
Yeah, well, that's an excellent idea. You know,
and then if that doesn't work, you can go Dazzler.
Well, it could be like Saturday Night Fever.
Squirrel Girl.
The musical.
The musical.
Where are my nuts?
Where are my nuts?
Where are my nuts?
Oh, here comes a cat right up the tree.
I can't find my nuts.
They're buried in my wife's purse.
All right.
Let's keep moving on.
It just occurred to me. Yeah, I know. We're digressing once again here. I'm sorry.
Okay, Chris, where were we? We got off topic.
I'm sorry.
Some sort of direction. On how to get back.
I know you do.
Okay. Oh, here we are. Chris, this is exciting news. It's not news yet. This is from Bleeding Cool, great website. Rich Johnson reports this that he's hearing from reputable sources. Quote unquote.
Reputable.
Yes. That the X-Men universe, the X-Men world, world of the X-Men, are moving into two.
Can you say it in some other way? I don't quite understand what you're talking about.
Looks like there would be two distinct teams and books in the works. So you're going to get like a Scott Summers Cyclops.
Right.
Leading the Xavier minded team. While the Magneto-motivated team will be led by none other than Wolverine.
You see, I find that very strange. Why would Magneto and Wolverine sort of team up, I guess I'll call it? Like, is it
Wolverine's a badass at heart.
You know, I don't know. I mean, I'm going to ask our producer, James, if you can just think about this for a second and maybe chime in a second to see why would Wolverine be on the same side as Wolverine or as Magneto? Because I really don't quite get it, other than the fact that maybe he's like, you know, he understands he's a mutant and he wants to have everything from mutant kind or anything like that. I'm not really too sure what exactly he's trying to get at here, because I guess Wolverine, you know,
he's always been fighting for the rest of the people. So why would he now decide that he just wants to be for mutants? I don't really quite get that point.
Right. I mean, he's the working Joe.
Yeah,
he's
I guess.
A stiff.
I guess. Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. But I think, I guess the X-Men, the X-Men world, is big enough that I don't know what they're going to try to do. Obviously, because when they do this, Chris, they're going to polarize,
right?
Them, and then there'll be some sort of civil war among the X-Men a year later,
right? Well, right. Our producer James has chimed in here, and he says that basically, Wolverine and Magneto kind of have no moral qualms about what needs to be done in order to get the job done, right? So they're willing to kill or whatever it happens to be in order to you know go with that kind of. End. Whereas,
right.
whereas guys like Cyclops and the Beast and those kind of characters, they would never do those kind of things. They would never do what they need to do in order to finish the job, so to speak.
Right. Well, the exciting news, Jason Aaron would be writing a four-issue exercise miniseries about Wolverine's X-Men with a different artist on for each issue. And artists lined up so far, they say, are McNiven, which is Steve McNiven,
right? Yeah, yeah.
And Mark Silvestri.
Oh, very good. Very right. good. Well,
so
that's
these are some talented people.
Well, yeah, I mean, Mark Silvestri, of course, he drew X-Men years ago.
Now, didn't he draw part of that Grant Morrison run? Right?
Yes, he did. Yeah. Yes. That's right.
And so I don't know. I think it's good. I think it's going to shake up the X-Men universe.
Yep.
I think
yep.
it's going to set up some things that Marvel can do
for sure.
with two camps in the X-Men universe. There's just Legion of X-Men fans out there that will embrace both,
yep,
really.
Absolutely, yeah.
And
yep.
So that's good. I think Marvel's using their head there, and they're coming up with something nice.
Excellent. Well, I think all the X-Men fans should be excited about this. And you know what? That's an excellent segue into our next musical entry. Interlude of a little bit of Spider-Man TV series back from the old 1960s Krantz animated series.
Chris, that was gorgeous. That drum solo at the middle is like, remember Zeppelin's Moby Dick drum solo? Almost like that.
Almost. Not quite.
Almost. All right.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, Chris, we're going to continue with industry news.
Yes. But, you know, the next section of comic culture is brought to you by Wizard World Toronto, the premier comic book convention coming up March 18th to the 20th. Check out more on www.wizardworld.com.
Yes, and you know, Chris, that's a great segue into, you know, the first industry news of the second section of the show.
First edition is part two.
Part two that we have is that you and I, Chris, and James, and Anthony, and the whole crew will be hitting the road.
Yes.
And we will be set up as the comic culture radio show at the Wizard World show. We'll have our own little table and little booth.
Yeah, we're going to be there and signing autographs for those that, you know, maybe happen to want it to light a cigarette with or something like that.
Yeah. Now, I'm signing my for free. I think, Chris, you said 10 bucks for yours.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
no,
10 bucks.
Wasn't it somebody
I'm giving them 10 bucks.
Somebody told me that who's the original? Adam West.
Yes.
Yes. Now, the way he charged
telling you that.
The way he charged for his autographs was he would take the person's item and he would look and go, oh, 1966 Batman kite. Boy, if I sign this, it'll be worth $800. I'm going to charge you $400 for signing.
That's right.
Oh, a Batman. You know, I don't know.
And that's how we're going to do it.
Right.
We've decided that we're going to sign items.
Right.
Probably that have nothing to do with us because really there's nothing out there that has anything to do with us.
Right.
So we'll be willing to sign almost anything.
Almost anything.
Almost anything.
Including almost anything.
You know, I was going to say something about, about skin, but, you know, I won't go there.
All right, Chris. Let's talk about let's talk about the new Superman movie, the Zack Snyder, Superman movie.
Zack Snyder. He'll make your wieners and produce a great Superman movie.
Yes, quality. So Kevin Costner, I'm reading that Kevin Costner might be in this movie.
I've heard that, yes.
Yeah. So now the speculation is on what he's going to play in the movie.
For sure,
because
for sure.
Everybody's saying he should play, because, you know, him playing the Midwest folk.
Right,
so Pop
Kent
would be perfect.
Yep.
And I don't know. And it's other guys were saying, you know, General Zod and stuff, which may not make sense.
Yeah, I can't see him playing General Zod. And, you know, I don't really know if I can see him playing, you know, Pa Kent. Either. I don't know who he would be.
He should, you know who should be in the movie?
Bizarro Superman?
No, the Postman.
The That would not be good. No.
No.
Be, no. No, no.
How about like Robin Hood in a crossover?
Yeah, there you go. That would be terrible. I don't know. I don't even like, you know, Brainiac, the Toyman.
The Toy Man.
Yeah, it was a character from, you know.
Well, I know that, but
I'm just saying.
Okay. I don't know.
Hold on. So our producer James is trying to mouth something to me here. Maybe like somebody from the Daily Planet, like maybe somebody like Perry White.
Right.
Yeah.
You're right.
Great.
You're right.
Caesar's ghost.
Jesus. All right. Yeah, well, listen. Kevin Costner, though, a big name, obviously,
yes,
a big Hollywood name, big Hollywood icon, would lend some weight to the Superman movie. But you know what? I think you've hit something here, because we're speculating on casting and stuff like that. Is, I don't know, when these big Hollywood movies come, they seem to want to lean toward a huge, big name supporting cast type of thing, in order to sell the tickets.
Yes.
I don't know about that. I mean, you don't need Kevin Costner to play the Postman in order to sell Superman.
Yeah, you're right. You know, and you know what's funny is, this is going to be a new reboot of Superman, right? Like, they're not going back and trying to, you know, build on what they've already done. This is going to be like a new Superman kind of thing. So maybe he is going to be Pa Kent, right? I mean, maybe he's going to play the southwestern, you know, country bumpkin kind of character. I don't know.
Right. All right. Well, Kevin, if you know what you're going to play already, please drop us a line through the Comic Book Daily website. All right. Hey, Chris, you're a big fan of Preacher.
Yes, I am. Huge.
The Garth Ennis Preacher.
Yep.
And so this guy named DJ Caruso.
DJ Caruso, yeah. I've heard of him, yeah.
Yeah. He apparently on his Twitter.
Yeah.
Is that what it is? A Twitter?
Twitter, yeah. Yeah. Yep.
On his Twitter, he says that he looks like he's got the directing gig for
the new
Preacher movie.
That's right.
Now, we talked about Preacher before, and we all thought, not we all thought, but I think the consensus was that That would probably would have been a better kind of HBO series movie.
Because you know what? There's so much going on. It's kind of like, you know. I almost dread bringing it up again because we do talk about it a lot. But it's almost kind of like Walking Dead, where there's a lot going on, almost too much to do for a 2-hour movie. That really, it has to be like a 6-hour miniseries kind of thing, like, you know, or something like that. Because The Preacher, there's so much involved in, even in every graphic novel, that it would take a long time to try to cover everything at once. And even with the graphic novels, you kind of have to think to yourself, well, which one are you going to do? Are you going to start from the beginning? And hope that maybe there's going to has some legs to it, and maybe hope that, you know, there'll be a second and third movie,
right?
Or do you kind of cram all the greatest parts of all the great Preacher graphic novels all into one and make this, like, you know, crazy mixed up movie, right?
Right. Well, like, I think there's enough material in Preacher, though, if they really tried to go overboard on the first, there's still going to be plenty left over for a second.
Yeah, absolutely, like absolutely. Yeah.
Whereas the approach for, let's say, an HBO or AMC type thing would have been slow and steady, build up momentum,
yes,
and have like a long storyline told over many episodes. Right?
But they could make. But I mean, there's lots of cliffhangers in even in the graphic novel from comic from individual comic to individual comic that it would make for a good miniseries as well. So right. I think there's lots there. We'll see how it goes.
Right. The good news, though, is Preacher is being developed.
Yes, which I think is great.
Right.
And this is something that they've been talking about for years now, so I'm glad that it's finally coming to fruition.
Excellent. All right, so Diamond Comic Distributors, Diamond, of course, for comic book stores. If you frequent your local comic book shop, and if you don't, you should. Almost everything they get in that shop comes from Diamond Comic Distributors. They have the exclusive rights to distribute Marvel and DC and things like that. So they have their annual awards called the Gem Awards, and these awards are given basically for sales achievement.
Right, right.
And so I'm just going to go over a couple of awards, I guess, that we want to talk about. And the comic book of the year for under $3 was Brightest Day number one.
Oh, okay. That's very cool. Yeah.
The comic book of the year for over $3 was Batman The Return number one.
Okay. Yeah. Very good.
The toy manufacturer of the year was DC Direct, which you and I have both agreed is the best toy manufacturer.
We just finished talking about that and how great they were, so it's right. that's not surprising.
The comic publisher of the year was DC Comics.
Okay.
The original graphic novel of the year, Superman Earth One hardcover.
Okay, very cool. Yeah. Okay.
The game product of the year, DC HeroClix Blackest Night starter set. The toy product of the year, Blackest Night Power Ring Spectrum set. So I rhymed those off for a reason.
Yes. What is that reason?
The Gem Awards reward sales achievement.
Yep.
And now, yet Marvel dominates sales.
Yeah, it's funny how everything basically in those awards that were just given out is all DC-based.
You had, I think, Kick-Ass. They won some sort of graphic
novel. But that's not even a Marvel. That's Marvel, but it's not really Marvel, right?
So what's going on here? Like what is I'm not sure. Does Diamond hate Marvel or?
I don't think so, because I mean, certainly Diamond, you know, gets a lot of profit from Marvel. But I don't know. Maybe they're just realizing that maybe DC is just telling better stories, even though Marvel has, you know, the more popular characters at this time, right? I mean, they've got, you know, X-Men and Iron Man and Spider-Man, and they sort of seem to be dominating the movies.
Or is it that DC can bring out the big hits? So DC can hit the number one. Right? DC can hit the home run on that $2.99 comic.
Yeah.
And DC can hit the home run on that toy or whatever. But DC doesn't seem to have – they don't have the depth on the bench. So where Marvel can bring you – they'll take the 3rd, 4th, 5th, 8th, 9th, 10th, 12th, 17th, whatever. They'll take so many of the secondary spots – that, you know, overall they just have so much depth that they rule the market share.
Right.
Whereas
right.
maybe DC will have that one product that everybody wants.
That's right.
But DC can't seem to transfer that into
an ongoing thing with all
more
all
depth
their,
on their bench,
yeah,
I guess. Right, which is, I mean, seeing DC take away all these accolades from the Gem Awards, which is based on sales achievement, it's odd that these guys aren't ruling the market share.
For sure. But you know what? I think this is changing. I think this has changed over the years. I think from what I remember from years ago, I think Marvel was sort of the top winner over the past years. Maybe not in the toy lines, but certainly in the storylines, where it was usually X-Men and Spider-Man winning those kind of things. Whereas now it's Batman and Darkest Night. Blackest Night. You certainly wouldn't have seen any kind of Green Lantern book of any kind in that top realm 10 years ago. And I think this is sort of changing. I think they're sort of getting better writers on the lesser tiered characters and bringing them back up to that first tier category.
Right.
Which is funny because really, you know, Marvel had that chance to do that with Iron Man, and they couldn't quite grasp it. Right? They couldn't generate that frenzy for the Iron Man character into sales for the Iron Man comic book.
Right. You're absolutely right. You're right. And DC, I think, is faced with the same dilemma because they're at that dilemma now. Okay, you know what, man, Batman is really working. Let's have, 17 Batman titles. That's not going to do it for them,
no.
Right? So they have to kind of, I don't know. They have to work on the depth on the bench, that's for sure.
That's for sure.
Chris, let's drop that and move on to our next segment, which will be the last segment of the show, I believe. We have a sponsor for.
Do we need another musical interlude? Are we good here?
Do you want some musical
interlude? Yeah, let's do a quick.
Do a musical interlude.
Okay, you know what? I've got an oldie but a goodie, and especially as we were talking about DC, I thought you might enjoy this one.
Banded together from remote galaxies are 13 of the most sinister villains of all time, the Legion of Doom, dedicated to a single objective: the conquest of the universe. Only one group dares to challenge this intergalactic threat, the Super Friends. Justice League of America versus the Legion of Doom. This is the Challenge of the Super Friends.
Yeah, that guy should do weddings. Should MC weddings. And the bride and the groom. The groom is heading for doom.
Oh, that's okay. Horrible. All right.
Chris, this takes us into the last segment of the show, and the last segment is brought to you by your local comic book shop. Superior selection, superior customer service. Visit your local comic book shop.
Oh, wow. I thought here. You know what? I could have sworn you were going to try to plug your store there.
No.
And you didn't go there.
Did not even cross my Big B mind.
That's good to know that Big B was
Big
not
B
on
comics
your mind.
No,
I'm good to know. That's good to know that you weren't on. That wasn't on your mind. That's
all
good.
Right.
That's excellent.
Chris, I want to talk about on comicbookdaily.com.
Yep.
There's a post on successful adaptations called Pick 5. I did a post on comic book adaptations. You and I always preach how comics are great, how other industries are picking up comic properties, how movies are using comics, video games are using comics, and so on and so forth. So I thought I'd explore, have comics been able to go likewise and take other properties and make them into successful comic books?
Okay. So, James is giving the high ten here. Hold on a second here. Okay, so give me some examples here. I'm not quite sure I understand what you're talking about.
So let's talk about, let's say, toys.
Okay.
So something that starts out as a toy that gets adapted into a comic book.
Yeah.
Have there been success stories?
Oh, okay. Yeah, sure.
Right.
Okay.
Right. So
Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, so the first thing that came to my mind was, say, Transformers.
Right, okay, yeah, absolutely.
So
yeah.
In 84, Transformers, they started making the toys.
Yep.
They licensed a four-part miniseries to Marvel.
Yep.
And that turned into 80 issues.
Right, right,
right.
Okay.
So now I want to explore this. Are there more?
Like, oh, for sure. Well, I mean, like there was a ton that was created at that time. I mean, but, you know, remember Transformers also had the TV series. So, I mean, the G.I. Joe, of course, was a huge hit for Marvel.
You're right. I think that went 155 issues,
yeah,
you're right.
Right. And the thing about that is that the guy that actually created and wrote for a lot of the TV series and created a lot of the characters, he was the writer. His name was Larry Hama. He actually wrote a lot of the issues for G.I. Joe as well.
Oh, okay.
So, I mean, he was sort of like the guru on G.I. Joe. So he was the guy writing the comic book, writing the stories, creating the characters. So he was the man. And I think there's lots of other examples out there. I mean, there was a Thundercats, and there was Silverhawks, and there's, like, you know, the list keeps on going and on. What's that? Oh, He-Man. Yeah, there was a Master of the
Universe. Yeah, you're right. There was some good He-Man comics. You're right.
So there's lots of them out there that were based on toys. I mean, and there's lots that didn't quite do as well either.
Right,
but, you know, there's lots that were successful.
Yeah, and then Pulps. Remember Pulps? Pulps were I guess you're kind of escapist magazines of the 1930s,
in
the late
20s. In the 20s, mainly in the 20s,
And so Conan the Barbarian was probably what I thought was the most successful adaptation out of a pulp.
Yeah, for sure.
Into a comic book.
Yeah, but, you know, there was also characters like the Phantom, which was a big success after Conan, or sorry, before Conan.
Right, but I think the Phantom, that's a good thing you brought up. The Phantom, I think, was a larger success in the pulps.
Absolutely, yes, for sure.
Then Conan was in the pulps.
You're right.
And then it was less a success in comic books than Conan was in comic books.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Yeah, Conan was a huge success in comic books.
Now, Conan is a great example of the comic book medium. Like, Conan first was in pulps.
Yeah.
And then in the 50s, he was reprinted in a book, but it was the Lancer books of the 60s with those Frank Frazetta painted covers that caught the imagination of people. And they did well in the late mid 60s.
Yeah.
But really, it was the comic book medium.
Yeah.
That brought the Conan character to the forefront.
That's right.
Because it was after a decade of comics and then the Savage Sword magazine, which was comic books.
Yeah.
It was a decade of that really brought the character to the public domain and launched the movies and launched the toys and launched, you know, Arnold's career.
Well, yeah, basically, yeah.
And all that kind of stuff.
Sure, yeah.
So where pulps failed, where pocketbooks failed, comic books succeeded.
Absolutely,
there. It seemed to have been the medium that, because Conan is so, I guess, visual. I mean, Robert E. Howard's writing is very visual, and to transfer that into a visual medium.
Well, and you know, I think it's important to note, if we're going to talk about pulps, let's not forget that it was a pulp magazine, Amazing Stories, in 1932 or something, like 1935 maybe, that Jerry Siegel saw the issue of the Flying Man on the cover of Amazing Stories and thought of he had read a book by Philip Wiley called Gladiator about the perfect human being, and then he saw the issue of the Flying Man on the cover of an Amazing Stories magazine, and that's where basically he started coming up with this idea of the perfect man and the Flying Man, and that's eventually how we got Superman,
right?
So, I mean, you know, pulps certainly have had their place, and, you know, certainly things have done better in comic form than in the initial pulp format.
Right. Mythology.
Yes,
okay,
absolutely.
So you go to Greek mythology, Norse mythology, all kinds of mythology. I think pretty well, without argument almost, Thor would probably be the most successful adaptation of a mythological creature god into comic book format.
For sure. You know what? I mean, of course, Marvel has Hercules as well. You know, if you want to talk about myth, you can talk about Greek myths, and Wonder Woman is sort of spawned from that Greek mythology as well,
right.
Which is an extremely popular character.
Yep.
But, you know, she was never, I mean, you know, Thor was an actual mythological character, Wonder Woman was sort of placed in the sort of the Greek mythology, right? So,
Did you know, like, DC actually had Thor. They used Thor on a cover of Batman. I think Batman number 127 had Thor, and I think Thor made it into Neil Gaiman's Sandman at one point.
Yeah,
too,
yeah,
right?
But usually the Thor. I don't know about the Batman one, but the Thor that was in the Neil Gaiman one, he was sort of based on what Thor was sort of really characterized by in sort of what I'll say real mythology. Like he had a beard, and he always had these goats that would travel, like a chariot of goats kind of thing, and you know, so it was a little bit more involved in the real mythos in than the sort of Marvelized version of Thor, I'll call it.
Right. Now, TV.
Yes.
TV, few things come to mind, but Buffy, I think, probably for many reasons. I think one of the main reasons is that it actually filled in a void. You had a huge cult following. Buffy ends on season 7, and there's fans that are wanting more Buffy and comic books to the rescue.
Yep.
The comic book medium not only just kind of takes a character from TV and interprets it, but no, actually continues the story,
which is fantastic,
that was being told on TV.
And I don't think that's ever been done before in that kind of format.
Right.
You know, we've had the Firefly and Serenity comics. And we've had other versions of things like that coming out.
Oh, adaptations of TV stuff goes way back into the, say, 50s with, you know, your Sergeant Bilko's and your, Beverly Hillbillies.
Bob Hope's
and stuff like that. This was a very cool concept they did there. And we have to talk about films, right? Because films have gained from comic books.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And the question was, have comic books gained from film?
I think so. I think, you know, there's always been the adaptation. And then sort of the characters that are developing from adaptations. And you know what? Just briefly talking about movies, or sorry, television, I completely forgot for a second here that the character of Harley Quinn was initially created for the Batman animated series, which then made her way into the comic book series as well. So, you know, if you want to talk about, you know, adding characters to the sort of the DC lore. And I know it's not on your list, but I think something that we should briefly talk about as well, I know we're running out of time, is video games.
Right.
The video games have translated into comics as well. You know, talking about Halo, Metal Gear Solid, there's lots of different video games.
Literature, Chris, Pride and Prejudice is now successfully being brought into. And you know, when we were going back to film, with I picked Star Wars as a great example because people were such big fans of the films, and that 16-year hiatus between the first series set of films and the second set of films, the comic books actually filled the void for those fans of giving them original material to satisfy their need for Star Wars stories.
Yep, that's right. That happened all the time. So that I think that's true. Well, anyways, unfortunately, we're running out of time here.
Yeah, we didn't give ourselves enough time.
Not enough time for that topic.
Sure.
But maybe we can revisit it another time. If you do enjoy our show, please go on to comicbookdaily.com and send us a little message. Let us know how you're doing it. And Walt had something else to say. Here.
No, that's fine, Chris. We'll just stick to the script.
Sorry, you know, I just and I'd also like to remind that all of our listeners that Walt and I will be appearing at the Wizard World Toronto Comic Convention March 18th, 19th, and 20th. Drop by the Comic Book Daily booth and say hello.
Right. Comic Culture is produced by Anthony Falcone and engineered by James McIntosh. For comments and suggestions, please visit comicbookdaily.com, click on the podcast link, and type away in the comments field.
Go out and support your local comic book store and have yourself a wonderful day.
See you next week.